individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness.
Trial.
We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterton at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterton, the voice for mental health in Hunterton County.
Trial.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody out there!
Get into it!
Everybody around
town!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know the Hunterton County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in? Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterton-chamber.org. The Hunterton County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Welcome back to Mental Health Matters. We're very privileged today to have with us Nicole Cardilla. I said it right twice. I'm 2 for 2 now. How about that? And Nicole is the licensed clinical social worker, but she's also the director of behavioral services at Alternatives. And we've been talking about, you know, the various problems people face with state funding and or that the organization faces with state's funding and such. Can some of these barriers, obviously, could they lead to homelessness or hospitalization?
Yes. Yes. And we've seen it before. Absolutely. I mean, a lot of our clients, like I mentioned, the majority of services that we provide are at home or in the community.
Right.
We go out to the clients. So we have seen, you know, clients after they decline services for a while, they're not doing well, or a loss of housing or any of those things, you know, can lead to a decline in mental health.
Right.
And can absolutely lead to recidivism in terms of hospitalization, and then not having somewhere to live. After that hospitalization can lead to homelessness, and it's a cycle. So, you know, our concern is that if these programs, you know, including our program, are not more properly funded, that these clients are not going to be supported in the community. And what's going to happen? Who's going to help these individuals that don't have other types of therapeutic support, or it's not enough, or you know, are they going to be able to pay their bills on time? Are they going to have the life skills to keep up their apartments? Are they going to have the therapeutic support about their mental illness? Are they going to have the medication education that we provide them? What's going to happen? Are they going to lose their housing? Are they then going to become homeless? Are they going to decompensate because of life stress or not taking their medications? These are all very real things that can absolutely happen if these types of services are no longer available.
Right.
And we've seen it happen in you know, smaller cohorts. I've seen it happen throughout my career in different types of programs that have closed throughout my career. So it's a very real fear. And it's concerning that it could happen, and we're doing our best to advocate through the right channels to the state, you know, in hopes that they will listen and take agencies like ours and other community service support service providers seriously.
Right. Do you find that clients that have family support have or who do not have family support, let me put it that way, have a much harder time dealing with the system?
I would say so. You know, it's unfortunate. We don't have a lot of clients that have a lot of family support. The majority of clientele that we serve have come from situations where they've been homeless, they've been through, you know, many institutions, they've been through, you know, traumatic situations, and they've lost family, or they've burned bridges with family, or there's been other types of scenarios where they just don't have contact with their family anymore.
Right.
So, I mean, I would say like almost 80% of our clients really don't have a lot of family support, but those that do are absolutely more well-equipped.
Right.
Having that family support is essential, and something that we try to do with our clients, obviously we're not their family, but we try to mimic that type of connection with them and that type mm-hmm. of networking and that type of support. We can't be their family, but at least we can help try to do the things that a
right.
family member would try to do,
right.
you know, in their absence.
Right.
But absolutely, unfortunately, most of our clients just really don't have that type yeah. of support.
Well, I think that's what's one thing that's really interesting is all the life skills that you provide that maybe a family would be doing, like helping them learn how to mm-hmm. cook and
right.
shop right and basically feed themselves.
Right, right. Yeah, a lot of our clients have come, because of the way that our programs are set up, we have two programs that serve homeless individuals. So we have, homeless clients. So we have one program that serves homeless individuals for mm-hmm. 6 to 12 months.
Mm-hmm.
They come straight off the street or from a shelter. And
right.
we have another program that serves homeless mothers and their children. So after that period of time, they could be transferred into our community support services program. So those individuals and families come from situations where they have really come from, you know, a very challenging situation where they've needed to be stabilized and they've needed to really learn how to rehabilitate. So they come in and their skills need a lot of growth. So we're serving people that have, like I said, come from domestic violence situations, from long years of substance abuse. Some of them are very young and they've been kicked out of the house. So a lot of them need to learn very basic life skills, or they used to have life skills and they no longer have it because of all of the substance abuse that they've been involved with or the trauma that they've been involved with. So, you know, someone at one time in their life may have held down a very high-powered job and gone to school, but maybe through years of substance abuse, they've really lost that ability to be able to maintain on their own. So we do a lot of that type of training.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to read a letter that Nicole wrote and sent to, was it your job's Facebook page?
Yeah, yep. I wrote it and I had it posted on our Facebook page.
Okay. It says, "I'm Nicole. I have a mental illness. When I just said that, what was your immediate reaction? Did you feel automatically uncomfortable? Did you think, why would anyone put that out there? That's so embarrassing. Did you think, maybe I missed it and there is something wrong with Nicole? Or maybe you're thinking of something, some of the things I have said or done that fit into what you think a mental illness looks like. Maybe you felt sympathy or pity, or like you wanted to distance yourself from me. Maybe now you feel like I'm strange or weird, or there's something broken or wrong with me. In your head, you're wondering how perhaps I have a job and family while having a mental illness. Is my family at risk? Maybe you're thinking that you don't know me at all. Are you maybe now apprehensive to talk to me or make eye contact with me again? I'm Nicole. I don't have a mental illness. Do you feel relieved? Are you glad that you're not friends or a colleague with someone who is mentally ill? Am I no longer embarrassing? Are you now chalking up the funny things I've said or done to just being random or a little out there? Do you think of course I know Nicole. What was I thinking? Are you inwardly feeling glad that you don't associate with someone like that? Do you no longer have the negative feelings or doubts about me having a job and being a mother? Did your thoughts and concerns about having to talk to me or interact with me go away? Do you feel like you can make eye contact with me again? Look around. The person next to you may or may not have a mental illness. You may not necessarily know what your colleague or neighbor or friend is struggling with. Through the thoughts and labels we attach to having a mental illness, we create stigma and perpetuate inaccuracies. Once we hear someone has a mental illness, we see them through the lens of what we think someone with a mental illness should look like, and we use labels to create further stigma and perceived illness. Sleeping in late on a weekend becomes depression. Energetic becomes manic. Wanting to be orderly becomes OCD. Being disorganized becomes schizophrenic. People who do have mental illness need to know that these labels and words do not define them. Their illness does not define them. Mental illness should not create a divide between us and them, because we are all human. We are mothers, fathers, sisters, daughters, brothers, and we are friends, co-workers, students, teachers, caregivers, minds, bodies, and souls. And we are all on this earth together, interacting with each other. So let's at least make the best of it. I think when I read that and I asked you to send that to me, I was stunned. I really was. And I've been dealing with mental illness both internally in my family and with NAMI for 20 years. And to have someone write this and have it published, you know, on the organization's Facebook, I thought was just awesome.
Thank you.
Now, I understand that you got some comments. Were they positive? Were they negative? Or both? Or
they were positive. I think it helped to make people think a little bit. I like to put discrepancy out there a little. and I did get positive feedback about, you know, kind of, all right, you kind of stuck that in my head a little bit there. And, you know, I think that people, without even realizing, having automatic thoughts about things, have it. And I think there's kind of nothing wrong with helping people realize those automatic thoughts. And
right.
Mostly everything was positive.
Right. and I got to tell you, in my experience, and I'm no doctor or anything like that, but with the almost 20 years I've been dealing with families who have someone or the individuals themselves, and in my own case, my youngest son, nobody could look at my son and say he's got mental illness. You would not know he right. is ill, you know. Like I said, he has a job, has it for over 3 years, has his own apartment, takes his meds religiously, volunteers at the hospital. You wouldn't know, you know. And 90%, I think, of the people who have mental illness could walk down a street and you wouldn't know.
Right.
You know. And, you know, oh, yeah, all right, once in a while people with it, they act a little off the wall, but everybody I know acts a little off the wall once in a while, including me, you know. And, you know, ask my wife, she'll tell you, you know. But it's just, you know what I mean? It's like,
yeah.
It's not something you can see. It's,
right.
you know, it's not like someone in a wheelchair or with a physical disability that you see him walking with a cane or with crutches or whatever. You know, it's not that way in most situations. And I really think that, to me, this took a lot of guts to write.
Thank you.
And I really respect the fact that you did it, because it did, for people who read it, maybe awakened. If it awakened one person, you know, then it was worth writing it.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I always feel like, you know, like you said something about your son before, 90% of the time, there's nothing, no, you know, red flags. And then someone can say something like, oh, he's schizophrenic. And then someone will go back and be like, oh, yeah, that one time he did that. Oh, wait, he does that. He's disorganized. Like, you'll try to put all those little things
right.
about him into this little category of schizophrenia instead of just, you know, it's like this automatic thought pattern that people have where they try to then categorize all your symptoms once they hear that you have a
right.
mental illness.
And, you know, most of us at one point in our lives and many points in our lives are get depressed.
Yes.
We break up with our girlfriend, we lose our job, you know, et cetera, or, you know, whatever. But the difference is how long the depression lasts,
right.
whether it's an illness or not.
Right.
And, you know, and it's the same thing with, you know, a lot of the illnesses,
mm-hmm.
you know, we do some things sometimes
right.
that are not considered quote unquote normal,
mm-hmm.
but you know,
I don't know anybody that has not had some type of depression or anxiety.
Yeah,
I don't,
yeah,
I've never
absolutely.
Met anybody that doesn't have something, but
absolutely.
Like you said, it depends on how intense and how long and how disruptive it is to their lives.
Right.
Ultimately.
Right. I know quite a few years ago now, where they had downsizing and I was downsized.
Mm-hmm.
And I was out of work for about a week, and I'm splitting wood in my backyard, for firewood, and I'm depressed. Then all of a sudden, it dawned on me, hey, Cartwright, you got four kids, a mortgage, car payments, taxes, you got to put food on the table, you better get a job, you know, and quit feeling sorry for yourself. But that's one thing, all right? That's not last for 3 months or 4 months or 5 months, you know. Mm-hmm. It's not like you can't get out of bed in the morning, right. You know, that sort of thing, right. You know. But, you know, we all face it, but it's just a matter of how long it goes on.
Right.
And, you know, to what severity it affects the person.
Right,
you know?
Absolutely.
And, you know. Hey, partner, you got anything?
No, not right off the bat.
Why
sorry.
Not?
Okay, we are talking about stigma when you talk about that, what you wrote there. So, you know, it occurred to me that this is the kind of thing where there's so many, I don't know if Somerset County has an anti-stigma task force. There seem to be a number of those kinds of things right here in Hunterdon. And it seemed to me this, I would like to see this published in more places where anytime there's a message about stigma, I think this really helps to kind of
sure.
say
I'd be
that.
Happy to have
yeah,
it
we
anywhere.
Should try to figure out what to do with that. But the people you deal with, though, are the ones kind of not the ones that Larry's talking about. They're that other, the percentage where maybe you can tell within the first 10 seconds of talking to somebody that they're not quite right.
Yeah.
Would
I
you
mean,
say?
We serve the what's called like the chronic mm-hmm. population, the chronic okay. mentally mm-hmm. ill population,
right.
which is those individuals that tend to have the more cyclical mental illness or the mm-hmm. more intense or however you want to put it.
Right.
But we, a lot of our clients, it's 50-50. Some of okay. those individuals you are more symptomatic on mm-hmm. a more regular basis. And then we have individuals you would also have no idea at
mm-hmm.
all.
Right.
And it's both. It
right.
really is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and our agency and we try to reduce the stigma that our clients feel just in little ways when we're with them. You know, we don't wear our IDs when we're with them. We don't, you know, in the back of our cars, we used to have bumper stickers with like call this number and to identify what our cars are. So we try to take measures so that people don't know that we're, you know, a staff person or
mm-hmm.
a clinician with
okay.
them in the community, and we don't identify ourselves because we don't want our clients to feel, you know, stigmatized, you know, by being with us. Unless
yeah, and if you're going
to
their house or their apartment
yeah.
or whatever, and you have, you know, stuff all over the car
right.
and everything, and you're wearing
you
your
know.
Badge. You know,
if you're walking around
that's understandable.
Store with a clipboard and, a
yeah.
and your ID badge and, you know,
yeah.
your alternative visor. And,
yeah.
you know, we try not to do things like that, just little things like that to help reduce stigma for our clients so that unless they want people to know that who we are with them, just so they don't feel like, you know, I have to have this person with me in the community to do
right.
things.
You know, NAMI has been trying to, you know, yeah, we come a little ways, you know, nowhere near what we'd like to be, but, you know, we have made grounds. I mean, not only
mm-hmm.
NAMI, but the whole, your organization and others like yours, have progressed in breaking through some of the stigma, but it really, it's still there,
yeah.
you know, and more so than we'd like to see,
mm-hmm.
you know. So anything that we can do to stomp it down a little
yeah.
bit is well worth it, you know.
Absolutely.
You
same
know.
With us.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, you know, like I said, if there's anything NAMI can do to help you,
okay,
we'd be more than happy to.
Okay.
You know. And I'm speaking from being on the board and, you know, the whole nine yards. So
yeah.
You know. Now I want to go back a second.
Mm-hmm.
Now we talked about access to the services,
mm-hmm.
right? And what is the intensity of the services?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we know that sometimes there's a funding challenge, you know, for
mm-hmm.
people that can't afford it or don't have Medicare mm-hmm. or don't have insurance or whatever. But what are some of the intensities of the services?
Yeah, that's a good question. So, currently we can serve people that have Medicaid or that don't have Medicaid. So if someone doesn't have Medicaid, the state will still pay for them, but it's at a lesser rate.
Right.
So I like to say that our intensity of services is flexible on the client need.
It's a lesser rate to being paid to you, right?
Yeah, it's 90% of what the Medicaid rate is,
right?
Which is already really low, but
yeah,
you can see my eyes rolling.
Yeah, I know all about that too.
But the intensity of services really depends on what the client needs, and it can be flexible. So when the client sets up their treatment plan with us, or their rehabilitation plan, as it's called, they can set up one goal or they could set up 20 goals. So if they have one thing they want to work on, we'll set that up. Or if they have 20 things, and we can see them based on that. So if they want us to see them once a month, that's okay. Or we could see them multiple times a week. We also, you know, there are certain things that we also know that we're not going to be able to bill for that we're going to provide to the clients. If they call us last minute on a Friday and say that they're out of medication, we're providing them with that service. We're going to take them to the pharmacy. So the level of intensity is really based on the client need at any given time. If they call us and say, I'm going to have to start working on my budgeting, we're going to meet with them immediately and put a new treatment plan in and, you know, meet with them.
Right.
Before we had to do this with having all the pre-approval with their treatment plans, we were providing up to 24 hours of service for our clients that needed it. But now every single goal has to be approved. So it's a little different. But I still really pride ourselves in saying that we will flex to what our clients need. And if they need something, we're going to do our hardest to make sure that they get it.
Right.
Whether it's, like I said, once a month or multiple times a week or even per day.
And it doesn't drop off on weekends? You pretty much, or does?
We don't have it staffed necessarily during the weekends. Most of our clients need things that are going on during the week. But if someone does have something that they need during the weekend, we'll put it out there and see if it can be covered. But they typically really kind of do their own thing on the weekends.
Right. Got it.
And, you know, like I said earlier with my son and his working, if he works 4 days 1 week, 4 days the next week, and 4 days the following week, he has a problem with his income.
Right, lose benefits.
And, you know, so they try to, he tries to get him to give 3 days this week, 4 days next week, 3 days the following week. And, you know, and most of the times it can happen.
Right.
Sometimes it can't. And, you know, he comes awful close to that line, you know, that he can't go over.
Well, do they just make him, what exactly would be a penalty? Would they make him pay more for his rent or?
They make him pay more for the rent, yeah.
Well, I understand that, though, in a way.
But.
Yeah, I know.
When you're not making a lot of money to start with.
Yeah.
And they're making you pay more for your rent, another $200 or whatever for your rent, that can be. You know.
Sure,
who's paying?
Yeah.
Hello.
The rental subsidies are usually based on between 30% and 40% of someone's income. So whenever the income goes up, the rental amount goes up. Right. The rent of the unit can change, and that won't do anything. But when you're in, it's all income based.
Right. Got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's hard.
It is.
When someone starts working and they start making a little more money, and then all of a sudden it's all going towards the rent, and it's
They don't feel like they've gotten any
satisfaction
out of that.
Exactly.
Hey, you know, that's what I said before. Sometimes
it's
sometimes it's beneficial for some people not to work. You know, my son's situation, his boss is pretty compliant with, you know, he'll give him 4 days 1 week and three the next and, you know, that sort of thing. So it balances out. So it's not, doesn't reach that level where he has to lose, you know, or pay more rent. But, you know, it's just, and again, if he didn't have family,
right,
you know, it's one of those things, you know. Now, getting back to the letter you wrote, what was, you know, just broadly, what were some of the comments that came? They were, you said that most of them were acceptable and
I had comments on it, and then I had a number of people that messaged me privately about it.
Okay.
Actually quite a few of people that message me privately. So, you know, in my personal life, I do have people that suffer with mental illness. I shouldn't say suffer, because not everybody suffers. I don't like to always use that word. But people that have mental illness,
right.
And they said that they felt that they were able to, like, hide it from people in their lives. But as soon as someone heard that they had bipolar or that they had OCD, then all of a sudden they could almost see that person being like, oh, now I know why they do this. And blah, blah.
Yeah, right.
So, like, they had, like,
judgmental.
Two, yeah, exactly. Like, someone had said that at work, someone found out about, you know, them having a mental illness. And then all of a sudden it was like every little thing they did was being scrutinized for any type of behavior they had was being scrutinized.
Right.
I had one person that did message me that said that she didn't think that was true. That, you know, that people don't necessarily have those automatic thoughts about someone being mentally. And I was like, well, that's awesome. If you don't have those automatic thoughts,
right.
Then, you know, you really don't have that stigma. But I'm sorry to tell you, most people do.
And yeah, exactly.
It's not just about mental illness. It's about, there's stigma.
Just about anything.
Anything. Right. And, like, even myself, you know, even being a clinician, have automatic thoughts about things. Not that I put as much judgment on them, but sometimes you still have automatic thoughts about things.
Right.
Like, hard to get past. But I did have a lot of people message me just, you know, kind of saying, oh, this happened to me
good.
In my life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
We have to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Are you struggling to find the right person to stay in a critical role in your company? Trying to attract and retain millennials? Regional Personnel is your staffing solution. Located in Lebanon, New Jersey, Regional Personnel is an ASA-certified, privately held staffing and recruiting firm providing you with everything from temporary to permanent employees. As ASA-certified professionals, we employ the latest tools and techniques to find, screen, and present to you the best talent that fits your needs. The result? Access to top talent in the shortest time with the lowest chance of turnover. We guarantee it. So call Regional today at 908-534-8113 or visit us on the web at regionalpersonnel.com.
This is Georgine Trinkle. I want to invite you to listen to Hot and Hunterdon every Monday from 4 to 5 p.m. You'll be treated to discussions on hot topics every week. Hot and Hunterdon provides a more in-depth look at issues that are happening right now. You can catch the show live and call in on what matters to you. Make sure to download the podcast to catch up on all our hot topics.
Welcome back to Mental Health Matters. We're very privileged today to have with us Nicole Cadilla. Hey, 3 out of 3. I'm getting good at this. And she is a licensed clinical social worker, but she's also the director of behavioral services at Alternatives, which she explained what it was and who they are. Now, during the break, you had mentioned there's something you'd like to talk about. So if you go ahead and...
Yeah, I guess the last thing I wanted to mention that I am, you know, we're looking at my agency, and something that I'm very interested in is the large part of my agency serves individuals that have intellectual disabilities, such as you know, various intellectual, like autism spectrum disorder, anywhere from mild to moderate to severe, profound intellectual disabilities, people that have Down syndrome, people that have epileptic disorders, and something that is stigmatized within that population is a duly diagnosed mental illness. And at one point I had done, you know, this is about like 2 years ago or so, at one point I had done like kind of like a little mini study in our database, and there was somewhere around like 40 to 60% of our clientele that does have a duly diagnosed mental illness of some sort. Whether it's OCD or bipolar, which can encompass a lot of different things, or some type of anxiety. And often it shows up in different ways within that population than it does within the general public, because of the type of cognitive or intellectual disability that the person presents with. So within the developmentally disabled community, they refer to everything as behavioral or behaviors. So oftentimes someone might present as being aggressive or agitated, and they may not be able to communicate very well, but what might actually be going on is anxiety or mania or something like that underneath. But because of the inability to communicate as well, those mental health symptoms often go undiagnosed and therefore not medicated well for, or not treated well for. So something that I take a very, you know, I take very seriously in my job, and something that I really want to be able to do is to help those individuals that we serve on in those programs to help be able to identify that a little bit better and help them to get better treatment so that the behaviors that they have become less frequent and they can, you know, have better quality of life. It's just something that is not really as easily identified and therefore sort of sometimes goes a little bit under the radar.
Yeah, my youngest son, who we were talking about, has been epileptic since he's five. So, and that was part of the big problem. The epileptic medication would interfere with the, you know, psychotic medication, and that went on for many years, and, you know, but they, you know.
It's a delicate balance, and it's, you know.
Yeah.
Working out the right cocktail of medications for someone is trial and error.
It is, and it's so sad because, well, everybody's body is different, and they digest the, like, you could probably take aspirin, and I may not be able to, or vice versa, you know. And, you know, your body may digest it in a different way than mine does, you know. And it's sad because it's so hard to find the right, you know, combination or medicine for the people, you know.
And then adding in someone that is limited verbally, or someone that, you know, is hard of hearing, or someone that isn't able to communicate, or someone that's blind, or, you know, all these different sensory issues, or someone that has severe autism and that can't communicate, you don't really know what's going on, or you don't know if medication's working or not. So you kind of have to rely on the behavior to tell you. So it's challenging, and it's something that I think still needs work, but it's something that, you know, we're trying at our agency to do a good job of.
Now, if someone wanted to reach out for more information about you or your, you know, to you or your company, how would they do about that?
They could contact me directly. They could also contact our admissions department if they're interested in receiving a referral or more information, but they're welcome to contact me. Should I give our number?
Yes.
Okay. So our main number is 908-685-1444. And my extension, Nicole Cardilla, is 248. And if someone is interested in making a referral to our admissions department, the woman who does all the admissions for our mental health department, her name is Heather Bielefeld, and her extension is 279.
Would you give that phone number again?
908-685-1444, and my extension is 248, and Heather's is 279. But we will communicate with each other either way.
Does Alternatives have a website?
We do.
Okay.
What is that? It is www.alternativesinc.org.
Alternativesinc.org. For the people who are spelling challenged, why don't we spell that too? Alternatives.
A-L-T-E-R. natives.org.
Great.
Good. You did it.
Out loud, like, I do that all the time with my daughter when I'm helping her with her homework. Yeah. Like, did I do that right?
You got it.
Well, Nicole, thank you so much for coming. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
You know, thank you for all the good work you do.
Thank you, Nicole. So thanks.
And we will be back again next week, same time, same station. And remember, folks, mental health really does matter. See you next week.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
USA Radio News.
Robert Bauer, a suspect in a deadly shooting at a synagogue in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, appeared before a federal magistrate today in a wheelchair. He accepted a public defender, and an initial hearing was set for Thursday. U.S. Attorney for the Western District of Pennsylvania, Scott Brady, on what will happen at that hearing on Thursday.
At that time, we will have the opportunity to present evidence demonstrating that Robert Bowers murdered 11 people who were exercising their religious beliefs.
Cesar Sayoc, the man suspected of sending pipe bombs to prominent Democrats around the country, appeared in a federal court in South Florida today. Department of Homeland Security Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen joined Fox News and was asked if Sayoc had any help.
Investigation is still underway. What I can assure you is that if there are additional perpetrators, they will also be brought to justice.
Sayoc is facing 48 years in prison. You're listening to USA Radio News.
Indeed knows finding the right hire takes time away from your business.
Hiring a qualified data engineer felt like a second job.
More job seekers use Indeed than any other site, so there's no better place to find someone with the skills you're looking for.
I needed someone with a master's in computer science and database experience.
Plus, Indeed screener questions help you find your shortlist fast.
Now I'm back to having just one job.
See why more than 3 million companies...